Mind and Body Reset, Modern Wellness Decoded. Science-backed wellness made simple.
Have you ever watched an athlete make a perfect shot and felt a little ghost of that movement in your own muscles? Or found yourself wincing in sympathy when someone stubs their toe?
Oh, absolutely. Or even just tearing up during a film when a character is crying. You're not sad, not really, but you feel their sadness. It's a physical reaction.
Exactly. For me, as someone who works with stories, that's always been the central mystery. How do we connect so deeply with the experiences of others, whether they're real or fictional? It feels like magic, but it turns out it might just be biology.
And that's what drew me to this, too, but from a wellness perspective. I've always been fascinated by how our environment and our relationships physically shape our health. The idea that our social connections, or lack thereof, have a tangible neurological basis is just, it's a game changer.
It really is. And it all points to this incredible and frankly still debated corner of neuroscience that we're diving into today, the world of mirror neurons.
They've been called the empathy neurons, the cells that might form the very foundation of human connection and understanding.
It's this deceptively simple idea that certain brain cells fire both when we do something and when we simply watch someone else do that exact same thing, as if in a small way, our brain is running a simulation of their experience.
The implications are staggering. We're talking about everything from how we learn to walk and talk, to how we form societies, to new pathways for healing and mental well-being.
So today we're going to unlock that mystery. We'll explore the science, the controversies, and what it all means for our daily lives. How can understanding this mirroring system in our brains help us become more empathetic, better learners, and ultimately, healthier human beings?
It's a journey to the very heart of what connects us.
And it's that simulation idea that's so powerful. But it's also where the story gets a little more complicated. Because as beautiful and as elegant as that theory is, there's a significant portion of the scientific community that pumps the brakes hard.
Oh, so it's not as settled as it sounds? I mean, the term mirror neuron is everywhere. It feels like established fact.
That's the fascinating part. The consensus today is, well, that the initial excitement might have gotten way ahead of the data. Critics like Greg Hickok have raised some really fundamental questions.
Such as?
Well, for starters, are mirror neurons even a distinct class of cell? Or is this mirroring activity just a sort of echo, an artifact of the entire motor system becoming primed and ready when we see an action?
So not a special empathy neuron, but more like the whole engine room lighting up in anticipation. And we're just noticing a few specific sparks?
That's a great way to put it. The early studies were based on, you know, qualitative descriptions of just a handful of neurons in monkeys. And some scientists, like Elon Dinstein, argued that this wasn't enough to build such a massive theory on.
That makes sense. You find one amazing thing, and suddenly it explains everything. It's a very human tendency, even in science.
It is. And then there are even more pointed critiques. There's this logical puzzle another researcher, Vladimir Kosinogov, pointed out. The theory says mirror neurons fire to help us understand the goal of an action.
Right. That's the core of it.
But they only seem to fire for goal-directed actions. So the question becomes, how do they know the action has a goal before they fire? It's a bit of a chicken and egg problem.
Whoa. Okay. I've never heard that before. It's like saying a smoke detector only goes off for fires that are going to burn the house down. How would it know in advance?
Exactly. It suggests that some other part of the brain has to figure out the intention first. And then, maybe it activates the motor system, including these so-called mirror neurons.
So that would completely flip the theory on its head. They wouldn't be the source of our understanding, but a result of it.
Potentially. And that leads to this other really compelling alternative idea from a researcher named Cecilia Hayes. She suggests that mirror neurons aren't some profound evolutionary adaptation for empathy.
The great leap forward for humanity that we hear about.
Right. Instead, she argues they're simply a byproduct of associative learning, that we're not born with them, but that they develop because throughout our lives, we see ourselves perform an action while simultaneously feeling ourselves perform it. The sensory experience and the motor command just become linked.
So every time I've watched my hand pick up a cup of coffee, my brain has just been strengthening a connection between the sight of that action and the motor plan for it. And when I see you do it, that same pathway gets a little jolt.
That's the theory. It's learning, not magic. It's experience, not a pre-programmed empathy circuit.
That's, honestly, that feels a little less poetic. But it also sounds incredibly plausible. It grounds the whole phenomenon in a process we already know exists. But then, what does that do to the idea of them being the basis for empathy, or even, I don't know, for some of the wellness applications we were going to discuss?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It completely reframes the whole conversation. If you take the poetic empathy neuron idea off the table, does it gut the whole concept? Does it make it less meaningful?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm feeling right now. It goes from being this fundamental part of our shared humanity to just a learned trick of the brain, a side effect of paying attention.
But see, I actually find the opposite to be true. I think Hayes's theory is, in some ways, far more powerful.
How so? It feels like a downgrade.
Well, think about it. If it's a hardwired evolutionary gift, then you either have it or you don't. Your empathy level is kind of fixed. But if it's a skill that's learned through experience,
then it can be improved. It can be trained.
It can be trained. It means empathy isn't a destination, it's a practice. It suggests that the more diverse experiences we expose ourselves to, the more actions and emotions we witness, the more robust and flexible our mirroring system becomes.
So, someone who feels they struggle with empathy isn't broken. They might just be, I don't know, under-practiced. They haven't built up the associative links?
That's the implication. It's not a moral failing. It's a developmental one. And that opens up incredible avenues for wellness and healing. It means we can consciously build more compassionate brains.
Wow. Okay, when you put it like that, it changes everything. It takes it out of the realm of magic and puts it into the realm of personal growth. But it also flies in the face of that grand narrative we always hear. The one from pioneers like Ramachandran, right? The idea that these neurons were the great leap forward for human evolution.
It does. And you can't blame anyone for loving that story. It's a beautiful, compelling narrative. V.S. Ramachandran is a master at creating those. He talked about them being the basis for culture, for language, for everything that makes us human.
The neurons that shaped civilization.
Exactly. And that story did incredible work in getting people excited about neuroscience. But the slower, more methodical science that followed suggests a less dramatic, but perhaps more practical reality. It's less about a sudden evolutionary explosion and more about the slow, steady wiring that happens every single day of our lives.
So what would that training even look like? Are we talking about, like, empathy push-ups? How do you strengthen an associative link for something as complex as compassion?
Well, that's what's so interesting. It might be simpler than we think. It's about the quality of what we're observing. For instance, think about learning a physical skill. Watching a world-class pianist play versus watching a beginner. Your brain isn't just blindly mirroring the movements.
Right. You can tell the difference. You feel the fluidity of the expert and the hesitation of the novice.
And some research suggests our mirror system reflects that. It responds more strongly to actions it recognizes as competent or successful. So, if we apply that to emotion, maybe it's not just about seeing that someone is sad, but about exposing ourselves to authentic, nuanced portrayals of that sadness.
Through what? Through art? Through stories? Watching a brilliant actor give a performance?
Maybe. Or just by being truly present with another person. By paying close enough attention that you're not just seeing the label, sad. You're observing the tiny muscle contractions in their face, the specific rhythm of their breathing, the tension in their shoulders. You're giving your brain higher quality data to build those associations.
So mindfulness, in a way, it's a tool for building a better mirror. That actually makes a profound amount of sense. It grounds the whole thing in a real, tangible practice. It's not just about a mysterious brain cell doing its thing. It's about what we choose to pay attention to.
And that's the profound shift, isn't it? It takes the power away from some predetermined biological lottery and places it directly into our hands. It becomes about the quality of our attention, the choice to be present.
It really does. And I have to admit, my initial feeling of being a little let down by the science is it's completely gone, replaced by this sense of, well, empowerment. The idea that by simply choosing to engage more deeply with the world, with art, with the people in front of me, I am actively sculpting my brain for compassion. That's a wellness tool I hadn't even considered.
You're building a more resonant instrument. That's what it is. And for me as a storyteller, it's a huge validation. It suggests that stories aren't just entertainment. They are vital training grounds for the mind. They are empathy gyms.
Empathy gyms. I love that. So, as we wrap up, I guess the big question I'm left with is, what's the one thing you hope people take away from this? Is it the science, the controversy, the practical application?
For me, it's the beauty of the scientific process itself. We started with this incredible, elegant, almost mythic idea, the neuron that shapes civilization. And it was a fantastic story. But science at its best isn't about finding a story and sticking to it. It's about refining the story, making it more accurate, more nuanced, and in this case, I think, more useful.
So the grand narrative wasn't wrong, just incomplete.
Exactly. It was the first draft. And the new draft is less about a magic bullet and more about a lifelong practice. And that, to me, is a much better story.
Yeah. My final thought is a little more, I guess, personal. It's the simple realization that we are constantly affecting each other on a neurological level, whether we're aware of it or not. Your calm can literally calm my nervous system. Your stress can activate mine. It makes me want to be so much more intentional about the energy I'm putting out into the world, because other people's brains are, well, they're listening.
They're mirroring. What a powerful, and I think, deeply hopeful place to end. It's been a genuine pleasure exploring this with you.
You as well, and to everyone listening, thank you for lending us your attention and perhaps a few of your mirror neurons. We hope it's left you with as much to think about as it has for us. Until next time.